is The Business of Being Human. I'm Christine Hildebrand.
And I'm Wendy Horn Brower of Intune Collective. We help leaders like you reinvent how you lead and operate, connecting you and your companies to greater possibility and performance.
From joy to awareness to consciousness and capacity building, we know that business as usual isn't business at all. Welcome to this exciting episode of The Business of Being Human. I'm Christine Hildebrand, and I'm here with our Director of Strategy, Sophia Chansey, and our Director of Learning and Innovation, Wendy Horn Brower. Super excited to have this conversation. I know, ladies, we have been doing some great work with clients and are noticing some commonalities with the companies and CEOs that we are working with, and wanted to share a little bit about what we're sensing and seeing, and maybe some anecdotes that our listeners can take away to help them and help lead their teams and their organizations to smoother momentum and scale. We're here today to talk about the five major pressures felt by CEOs and executive teams today. So if you're a CEO, if you're a founder, if you're on a C-team, you'll want to pay close attention to what we have to share in the next few minutes. So welcome, ladies. I just wanted to open it up and say hello, and very, very excited to be here today.
I'm really happy that this is a topic of choice, because from all the clients that we're working with, we have a lot of data and see patterns and trends. So by naming it, we're hoping to help other companies that are going through similar scenarios to have, you know, concrete, actionable steps that you can take to feel less pressure, more resourced. I think, you know, to start us off, we are defining these pressures as things that the CEOs are feeling, primarily starting with the board and investor expectations. Do you want to say a little bit about that, Sophia, based on your experience with clients in the field?
Thank you, Wendy. Based on the work that we've been doing with our clients, it is clear that every organization certainly faces pressure from the board and the investors. And is there a gap between the original promise to the investors that Series A through D have been raised, and have the products or services that the company is providing shifted somewhat due to market conditions, due to what the company is seeing in the market and how the products are being taken up by the consumers? And so is there a gap between what's been promised, between investor expectations and the capacity, capability, and really the mission and values of the organization? And how do executives align those expectations, the board expectations, the leadership team, and the organization, honestly and with transparency?
I think one thing there is that the CEO, as the leader, that is the liaison between the board and their executive team, to really understand their role as the liaison, so they're not necessarily absorbing all the pressure themselves and then having to deal with the pressure, feeling alone in doing that, but really tapping into the resources of their leadership team and being very transparent, but then also making that a two-way street and making sure that they're taking on the input of their leadership team in communicating to the board, in setting the goals and agendas together, so that they're not kind of like stonewalling and girding, you know, in between and taking on all the pressure on both sides themselves. That's a lot to internalize for a human being.
Yeah, I would agree with that, Wendy. And there's a lot of CEOs that we're coming in contact with that are doing just that. And it's normal, right? I mean, when you're selling the true capacities of an organization to an investor and you're trying to secure a runway of funding for the scale of your operation, it's totally normal to upsell the capacity and the capability of the organization and put reach goals into some of these capability presentations. Then it's important that the CEO then turn to the organization and make them a partner, the executive team, in creating partnership with them about how do we frame up our presentation to secure funding within what we can actually execute? So I think you're right in the fact that sometimes the CEO or whoever, the CFO, the part of the funding team as they're presenting the capabilities of the organization is done outside of the partnership with the rest of the team, like commercial, product, manufacturing, all of those really important implementer leaders. And then they either get a watered down version of what the organization's goals are, or they're playing catch up to an unattainable goal. And so we're seeing often that gap between promises and true capacity. And a lot of it is communication, partnership, and grounding the promises that you are making to investors in the realistic world of what the organization can accomplish. But how are we helping organizations to actually bridge that gap?
Well, we work with both the CEO and the leadership team on getting clarity and alignment on what the right strategy is for the whole organization. So we help them get honest with each other, have more capacity for telling the truth, you know, the truth on what they're seeing from their roles, the truth based on their fears, what they might see is holding them back, and what they're sensing in the whole organization. And so that they can really fulfill on that original promise, but it's also honesty so that when a pivot comes, they can be both relational with the investors and have honesty around the strategy.
And to take it down into the execution part of it, right? We help our clients ensure they have the right tracking of the objectives that they're setting and on the objectives that they're aligning on with the board. So if the objectives are set, how are you going to measure them? When are you going to measure them? Who is accountable for executing on those objectives, tracking and measuring, and how are you reporting? So it's aligning all the way from vision and mission through to the promises to the board and the investors, through to setting clear objectives for the rest of the organization, focusing on those, and then tracking, measuring, and reporting them.
Mm-hmm. And that's a helpful tool to CEOs who might think that the clarity and alignment is there because it's clear for them. But this is a great way for the rest of the team to understand what clarity and alignment means for them as well, because they'll be executing with their next level managers or their next level team. It's a great communication and alignment tool.
Because what we see is that people need time to embody a strategic direction, or what does this strategy mean functionally to me as a leader of a specific area of the company? I need to, there's like processing time, internalization time that is not often allowed by C-level teammates, and to have cross collaborative dialogue and space for that dialogue to occur so that maybe even new and innovative solutions can occur. We call that level four listening, where we're having dialogue and new and emergent solutions occur by the virtue of sharing. That's all a process of integration and internalization of the strategy and what could happen. What does this mean for my team that may be in the commercial part of the organization? How do I then pivot and mobilize and engage and inspire teammates that are in my functional area? So spending time to kind of land and have conversations about what does that strategy actually mean to us as an organization? And what is it going to take for us to get there? I think those conversations are super important.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, that is pressure.
That's a great point. And I think what we also see, the CEO may be very clear in what the objectives are. And there's a need for that alignment with their team and allowance for interpersonal relationships and connection and everything else that must happen in the organization in order to actually execute to that clear strategy and objectives. I think the other interesting thing is that founders and CEOs, and certainly founder CEOs, having to evolve into the right leader that the company needs at any given time. And I think that's another pressure, right? So the pressure is the difference in the phase that the company is in. Founding and building a company requires a certain type of leader. Scaling a company requires a certain type of leader. Operating a company requires yet another type of leader. And so how do leaders evolve, update their skills and capabilities in order to be the leader that their company needs at the right stage in their organization? Mm-hmm. And how do you do that? Certainly in startups, when you have to move fast, you have to respond to market conditions fast. You have to move fast to potentially pivot products and services, as we all did 2 years ago. So that's an additional pressure on the leaders and the entire executive team, really, on how do we evolve to be what the organization needs us to be.
Mm-hmm. I think leaders sense that they need to evolve, but until they're able to have a conversation with someone like an executive coach or a team coach, or what Intune also does is we provide tactical coaching. So we can meet with a leader or a small subset of the team to kind of address like what's happening that feels urgent and problem solve together, but then also reflect back like, well, then what is your role as you're seeing it right now? How is that helping or undermining progress? And then how might you step back, take a look at it from a different lens, try on a different hat, be differently, feel your emotional self, name your feelings, like whatever's real for you, can you give it some credence and give it some visibility and that be the connector to the people that you're working with? So we put them into practice with like relevant skills in the moment in a coaching container.
What you're talking about is pointing to the four intelligences, right? Because if you're in a CEO role, you have established a certain amount of analytical and functional intelligence and capacity and capability and aptitude, right? If you're even in that role, the thing that we see common is the other two intelligences, which are relational and emotional, which typically relate to the people side of leadership. And that is the skill and the blending that Intune brings is how do you hold both the business leadership side and the people leadership side? Mm-hmm. And that is a beautiful blending when a CEO can get to capability in balance in both of those things and realizing and having sensitivity about the system of when to elevate and inspire and ignite your people and focus on nurturing people versus putting the gas pedal down on the business drive. And that's the beauty, I believe, of what Intune holds for a developing CEO and a developing senior leadership team is that there is a combination of both business development and human development that is really important to combine if you are looking at scaling and scaling in a way that's going to assure your success over time.
I think what you touched on, Christine, is CEO's responsibility to essentially tend to the soul of the organization.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes, business results are absolutely key. And as we spoke earlier, there's pressure from the board and investors to meet business results in that pressure will not go away. Absolutely. And how do you balance that with taking care of the people and the organization and making sure that the people have the internal capacity to execute on the strategy that has been developed? And that is also something Intune can assist the leaders with in terms of developing that capacity and capability to tend to others in the organization.
Especially when your runway is in front of you and you're conscious of the ramp. And that is a pressure in and of itself. How do you translate that into a more relational, embodied way of bringing everybody along with you at the same time?
Sophia, what is that saying that we always tell leadership teams about yes. going slow?
A great question, Christine. It's slow is smooth and smooth is fast. And the other point of this is that it's an ability to sometimes slow down and absorb and do the right things to bring people along on the journey. That doesn't mean going slow.
Mm-hmm.
It's a difficult yeah. one, a difficult one to grasp sometimes, right?
Yeah.
Just the word slow doesn't always resonate.
We've associated productivity and performance right. with fast, right? Because if it's faster, it's better. But what we're seeing is that if you slow down and really like make sure that the integration is happening that we were referring to earlier, that it actually ramps your speed.
Exactly. Slow down to go faster.
Sophia, so, you know, one of our clients, when we talk about slowing down, we're also framing it for them and with them as mm-hmm. patients. And I think when we talk about it as patients, you know, there's a light bulb that goes off because people can recognize when they're being impatient. And, you know, it's the counter skill to that. So it's like, okay, how do I actually develop patience, which then allows me to step back and have a wider view of the strategy, wait for people to come into alignment, knowing that what I'm essentially doing is holding space for this momentum that's going to come behind it, right? Mm-hmm. So we see that happening with a client that you and I are currently working on. So, well, that definitely is the pressure for, you know, human evolution. It's hard to change. It's hard to change when you've been doing things a certain way, you've gotten to the position where you are. The third pressure that we want to talk about is also another evolutionary growth, which is that leadership teams that come to form these growth-funded companies usually come from enterprise and large corporations. And so there's a set way of doing things. There's a set culture that has status and has, you know, output that is reliable and has sustained the test of time. But then when you come into a new company, it's really a more entrepreneurial mindset and set of behaviors that's really needed, right? So the pressure is maybe a little bit more abstract unless you understand this perspective that it really is a shift and it really is the opportunity to co-create together a more entrepreneurial venture together.
That's a great point, Wendy. Based on what we're seeing, when high growth companies are looking for industry expertise, they're pulling experienced leaders from corporate enterprise companies. And those leaders are absolutely passionate about the value and the mission of the growth company. And what they're used to is operating within certain frameworks and having the structures that the enterprise provides for them in order to operate. And sometimes what we see is that they bring that corporate culture with them. Now, not saying that everything in corporate culture is bad and we should leave it behind. And I think there needs to be a faster evolvement from, well, we used to do it this way, therefore that's what we should do, into taking mm-hmm. that, here are some really good things that we did, and here's some really good structures and frameworks or processes that we used, and pulling that in to development of new processes for the growth company versus trying to be mm-hmm. that role and that structure from the enterprise. So it's a take with you what is useful.
What works.
Take mm-hmm. with you what works. Leave your old title and your old company behind. Take in what works and create a new structure within your new company. Mm-hmm.
What that allows is more nimble collaboration and a little bit of the melting of the hierarchy and better decision making. And, you know, if you really truly believe that there's contributions at every level, that each individual might see something of value, that you really open up the doors and the opportunities to tap that value in real time with much more accessibility.
And I also want to recognize that, you know, if you're an experienced corporate leader that has achieved a certain amount of a success in your functional area of expertise, you're hired into these entrepreneurial worlds for a reason. And part of it is being able to be evolved as a leader and as an executive to not only like what is happening in the microcosm of your company, but also what's happening in the microdynamics in business overall, right? And we have a tremendous amount of empathy for leaders right now because they're not only being charged to develop innovation muscles on the fly, mm-hmm. but they're also bringing in identities from these past experiences that no longer fit within these microcosms of an entrepreneurial world. Mm-hmm. And so let me give you an example. So right now there is a trend of what is happening on a macro level of going from individual wins and more siloed operating patterns to more collective wins and cross-functional collaboration. That is a massive amount of change in terms of the dynamics of the transformation that are going on right now. So it's no wonder there is a default back to what we know and are comfortable in and where we feel an element of control and success. But the other part of what I believe we do so well at Intune is holding the spaces for transformation, helping leaders understand that they have the capacity to develop more of this unity or collective win mentality, and that it's possible, but they're looking more from a horizontal standpoint versus being operating in a vertical standpoint. And to be able to see their role as influencers is far beyond maybe what they have previously known. And that to me is a really powerful dynamic of change and transformation that's going on. That's also we want to name for the executives that may be listening right now. It's very, very difficult and not easy to be the resourced, capable, visionary leader right now that's needed to scale the companies that you're in. It's not easy. And so getting support that will help with perspective or how to build cross-functional partners or how to emotionally regulate when you're changing identities and you don't even recognize yourself in some of these cases. So I just wanted to just kind of frame out what is going on from a larger standpoint, and that if you're experiencing this in the microcosm of your company, it's very real.
The other thing I just thought of, Christine, as you were talking, is the shared intelligence, right? So you're talking about all these functional yeah. experts essentially joining growth companies with very specific knowledge mm-hmm. and very specific and deep industry experience. And how do they go from an individual expert into sharing that intelligence with the entire team? So what yeah. I know, you know. If we're a team, then you have access to everything mm-hmm. I know. And I think that is a skill.
Mm-hmm. It's definitely a skill, and it's also a shift in the mindset to be able to let go of the fear that if I don't hold on to it for my own personal gain and I contribute to the whole, that I have exponential amounts of gain that are possible. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's a real big mindset shift. And that's why I feel like it's important to name what may be going on from a macro standpoint and us mm-hmm. moving from an individual state of consciousness to a unity or more of a collective consciousness. If we're contributing to the whole, we all can elevate. And that's something that I know that we are putting out in front as a possibility for the companies that we're working with to do. Like, what could be possible if all of us work toward the same goal?
Absolutely.
I mean, you're limitless, right?
Absolutely. That really, you know, is a great segue into the next pressure that we want to talk about, the fourth pressure, which is really the fear mm-hmm. of losing your workforce, because we're in this moment of the great evaluation and people are moving. Recent Gallup survey showed that, you know, 67% of people are burning out. And when you're burnt out, you're not contributing, or you're looking for a way out to release the pressure. So you're searching for the next thing. There's a huge move towards entrepreneurism, and people are looking for job life, not even balance anymore, but integration and like a wholer way of being in the world. So how do we get to a place where we're actually acknowledging that and creating workspaces where people really want to be, where there's no demarcation, delineation, but yet the healthy boundaries are there. People are free to come and go and be in ways of feeling supported, valued, appreciated, contributory all at once.
Yeah. And I think, Wendy, it's important to sort of quantify this, right? Because we talk about the great evaluation and the talent market, and 4.5 million Americans quit their jobs in March. Those are record numbers. At the same time, 11.5 million job openings were posted in March. So that further exacerbates the issue. And how do we, as leaders, then build a culture from the top all through the organization that creates a workplace where we as leaders want to work and people want to work versus have to work? Because clearly, given the numbers, 11.5 million job openings, they don't have to work for a particular company. If they're looking for a certain experience, if they're looking for a place that fits them better, that makes them feel like they belong there better, then they can certainly find it given what's happening in the job market. So how do we create a space where they feel like they belong, they feel like they can do their work and be accepted and belong and be seen and be heard and work the way they need to work for their family and for their situation?
I feel like this is probably one of the best things that could have happened to business. You know, we've been in a, you know, employer market for, I don't know how many years. This is the first time in my lifetime that I've witnessed an employee market, a talent market. And for many of the CEOs that are listening, this is like you have two markets that you need to excel in. One is the market that is buying your product or service. The other one is the talent market. How are you competing in the talent market? So part of it is, how are you emphasizing building the environments and the culture? What are your working agreements? What is the feeling that you're propagating and creating in the way that work is conducted in your operation? I think the biggest thing is that people are looking for a place to go to work where there's certainly meaning, but what is the regenerative aspect? What is the exchange that is happening between work and talent? Is there just a one-way street, or is there a U-turn or an infinity loop in the generation, the cultivation, and the giving and the receiving of work? And to find out what actually is fulfillment, what defines fulfillment for your people, is really important. You know, as we have seen and heard from recent research, compensation is like the fifth most important thing to employees, and that having meaningful work and having a voice and a sense of belonging are certainly above payment.
As well as how and where people work, right?
Yeah.
We have come to expect a certain way of working. And I have seen recently an uptick in number of postings that are saying on-site only. I'm not necessarily arguing for fully remote or fully on-site work. And I think it's interesting. And I think when employers post for a fully on-site role, I mean, unless you're a healthcare facility, which of course makes sense.
Right. Needs to happen on site.
Mm-hmm. But posting for an on-site only role for a technology company or for a growth company is interesting because I think that causes companies to miss out on talent that could be based somewhere else in the country and have fantastic skills and experience, but would not consider the role because that would mean potentially relocation. So I think that's an interesting thing to look at as we work with companies who are thinking about how do we evolve and how do we come back to work or how do we come together? When do we come together? Do we come together every day? Mm-hmm. Do we come together every week? Or is it a different way of operating? And are we going to be more flexible? I'm sure you've all seen the Airbnb announcement, right? That said employees from mm-hmm. now on can work anywhere they like, including working from other countries for stretches of 90 days. You know, that approach is certainly creating a culture where people would want to be, assuming it's right for them.
It also attracts, it signals the kind of employee that they're looking for, right? Someone who might be a little bit more of a global mm-hmm. citizen, who has flexibility of a mindset to feel like they can be a digital nomad and work from different places. Maybe it's a sense of curiosity and who's nimble. There's a little bit of signaling there. But I also want to just add that don't let the virtual environment limit you, because in our work with clients, we can drop into a container, into a virtual container, and actually sense the mm-hmm. culture right away by how people are interacting with each other. If there's, you know, a lot of chat going on, if people are smiling and trying to make eye contact and checking in with each other before the start of a training or a workshop or a meeting, there's some juice there. There's some vitality. And by all means, it's absolutely possible to do in remote and hybrid settings to maintain that kind of affinity absolutely. And connection for each other.
I think, Wendy, to come back to your prior comments of what such an announcement signals, I think it also signals an inherent trust in the employees mm-hmm. and how they work. Right. So I don't have mm-hmm. to see your eyeballs to know that you're working. I trust that you will do your work whether I see you in the office or not, whether we're on screen or mm-hmm. not. I really like that signaling, the signaling of trust.
I totally 100% agree. And I think you hit the nail on the head around that word. And I think that there's another word that in terms of CEOs and leaders creating cultures where people want to work, there's two components. One is trust. Mm-hmm. The other one is belonging. Mm-hmm. And I think we would be remiss in not pointing out the importance of fundamental human development work is mm-hmm. diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging. And that work in terms of built into the core strategies of an operation is what's going to create the cultures of the future. And that work in diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging is part of mm-hmm. what we're talking Absolutely. About, is that building a sense of awareness of each other, our specific stories, our backgrounds, how it has contributed to shaping the humans that we mm-hmm. are, so that you're getting people to show up fully and to bring their best selves in contribution. And as our friend Nikki Lanier says, disposable energy, you know, that is an employee choice. Mm-hmm. How much disposable energy am I going to contribute to a culture or a workplace that actually values my contribution and sees me as a human being for who I am and the gifts I have to bring. Mm-hmm. So that's a really important thing. Trust, belonging, and certainly looking at your DE&IB strategy and how you're baking that into not only your operating model as a company, but your culture as well.
And not to be forgotten, of course, everything we've talked about just now is fantastic in terms of strategy. And then how do you execute it? How do you put together a structure, a framework, and systems yeah. to allow for this flexibility and still maintaining mm-hmm. the connection, the trust, the vulnerability among the employees who could potentially be fully remote? And that is something we love working with clients on, is creating those structures to enable them to create a workplace of belonging and mm-hmm. belonging and trust.
And I'd add one third piece to that: belonging, trust, and learning. Mm-hmm. So a big frame for all of this is, you know, mm-hmm. who are you being as a deliberate developmental organization, meaning that you're learning together, that it's not just at the top, it's that you're really seeing a lot of grace and providing opportunities for human growth and development, and that for that evolutionary spirit to take root within your organization as you go through all of this. I think we have time for one last pressure to talk about. Christine, Sophia, would either of you like to start?
Certainly. I think we touched on this a little bit just now in terms of structures and agreements. The pressure is, how do you go from startup mode, from the mode of we've just founded the company, we've been very nimble, we've been very innovative, we have almost no structures in place, to a company of that has grown to possibly 100 or more people and now needs those structures to be a fully functioning company with the same, it's the same mission, the same nimbleness of a growth company, and the need for structures in order to scale.
I think the first step is taking that core mission of your organization, your core values, and looking at how that actually expands and infiltrates the entire organization. A good example of this is that a lot of the companies we're working with have articulated values, and respect, for example, might be one of them. But how are the leadership team members defining respect? What does it mean in terms of how people think, how people behave with one another, how we talk to each other, how we pass the baton to one another, and how we turn and face our teams to communicate? So what we identify often is that the ability to expand on what is already there in terms of mission, purpose, values, and helping leaders define what those are and then model them in real experiences throughout the organization. The second piece in terms of the framework part to scale, and that is basically building scaffolding so that you can build a bigger and bigger skyscraper, is that you have to agree as a leadership team the rules of engagement, identifying what it is that you are doing collectively, how you're going to implement strategy or how you're going to model your mission, vision, and values. All of those things are decisions and agreements made with the leadership team, and how those collectively are decided, we help facilitate, right? Internally, that intelligence has to come from internal. You make the decision on the ground floor scaffolding, great, you start operating. Well, guess what? You're scaling now and you need to create the first floor. And then you go and you scale that and you create new agreements. How are we going to implement this strategy in a new country? How are we going to roll out expansion in a culture that we don't know? Okay, we're going to bring our sense of values that we've established on the ground floor, and we're going to build upon that. So I think that the important thing is that values and mission and vision are not sitting in a deck somewhere that is only discussed as words, but that it comes to life in an organization. In addition to the felt sense, it's also important to define some of the frameworks for operation. What are the rules of engagement we're all agreeing to as a team?
I think what you just said, Christine, is super relevant. And I have a message for the scrappy cowboy entrepreneurial, cowgirl entrepreneurial CEO who thinks, wow, like, you know, we did it by being scrappy and we did it by being super nimble and entrepreneurial. And I resist structure because in the back of my mind, I think that the structure is going to be stuffy or too traditional or too rigid. And yet it's the connective tissue that will bring the clarity and the alignment and more scaffolding for the momentum that you really want and that you are seeking for your organization. So it's another opportunity for identity shifting, but really taking care of your organization by seeing that this is something that connects people together so that you can work together rather than having the uncertainty of not knowing exactly what's expected or where you're headed. The systems help.
Yeah, I think the metaphor of building a house is a really good one. And you know, maybe it's a structural foundation, and the scaffolding is sort of the framework, the framing. you know, the walls, the furniture, the flooring, the drape, the soft coverings, all of those things can be invented and created. But it feels like in terms of scaling an operation that there has to be some sort of underpinning of structure. And that's what's holding. Now, that's not to say that the structure can't change, because you can continue to build the next floor of your structure and still have, you know, new rules of engagement that are appropriate, or new structures that are appropriate to whatever you're facing in that time. But in terms of giving a loose framing for not only the leadership team, but how it infiltrates throughout the rest of the organization is really helpful to know what the guardrails are.
That's so great. So if you've been listening to this conversation, we have other resources at The Business of Being Human. If you'd like to learn more about Intune Collective, we're at intunecollective.com. Send us an email anytime at ignite@intunecollective.com. We would so love to hear from you. Bye, everyone. See you next time.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you, Sophia. Thank you, Wendy.
Listening to The Business of Being Human has intrigued you, inspired you, encouraged you, we would appreciate it if you rated and left us a review on Apple Podcasts. This will help others find the show.
The Business of Being Human is a production of Intune Collective. It is produced and edited by Elizabeth Joy Windham.
Executive producers are Christine Hildebrand and Wendy Horn Brower. Our theme music is by Adrian Walther. It is called Empowered. Cover and episode art is by Lisa Hardy.
You can find all of our episodes and learn more about the services of Intune Collective at intunecollective.com.